Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to have a friend of mine, Bill Prater, appearing on our podcast. And I think you're going to be excited about it, too. Bill is the founder of Business Mastery and Scaleology. He's America's business alchemist, kind of like I'm a wealth architect, right? So I can be in that kind of company. And he helps business owners and entrepreneurs break free of inertia and accelerate into the future that they dream of. He created Scaleology and the Business Mastery System as the core foundational principles of dynamic and continuous business growth. A typical client of his sees their company rising to a position of preeminence and is not just satisfied with getting to the next level, but way, way, way beyond. Bill Prater, welcome to the podcast, Bill.
It's great to be here, Mark.
So good to see you again. I love your outlook and attitude and approach toward business. And we've had a couple of conversations already before, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought our podcast listeners and viewers could get some insight into what you do, but maybe you can give us like a 30-second minute background about you and what you can do for us.
So my background is investment banking. So I've always been involved with money. And what I discovered during that time, where we raised a little over $1.5 billion for all sorts of private businesses, Mark. And what I discovered is money wasn't what they really needed.
That's it.
What they really needed is they needed to know how to run their business better. And they thought money was the solution. And sometimes it was, but most of the time it was the wrong medicine for the problem at hand. And I was included in that, by the way. In other words, me, the business owner of an investment bank, and I tried to sell my company for a pile of gold. And everybody said, you must be kidding me. Your business is not worth anything. And so I was pretty disappointed. But I got some advice, which we'll cover a little bit in a few seconds, from a colleague of mine, a competitor, actually. And she gave me some advice, which we'll share. And I used that advice and converted my company into something extraordinary. And within less than 3 years, and was able to sell it to a company called Oppenheimer. And then went into what I'm doing now, which is I'm a consultant and have been since 1999, helping owners of 7 to 9 figure businesses rapidly scale their companies, and generally with the end goal in mind of an exit strategy, i.e. convert their business into some sort of cash and right off into the sunset, so to speak.
I love it. I love it. So helping people turn their businesses into a pot of gold and make a ton of money out of it, right?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So first, businesses is one of many what I call container words. And what I mean by that is that when people use a word like architect, for example, and this is not a great example, but they have this image of what an architect is. And then when they get exposed to something else that includes the word, they go, oh, I didn't realize that. I thought those people just designed skyscrapers. Well, that wasn't quite. Well, businesses.
Yeah.
So people think of businesses in general. And they'll think about some version, if you will, of Tesla, not realizing that Tesla began as what many people believe was a stupid idea of going in the automobile industry and competing against Ford and GM and Mercedes and Volkswagen. He was labeled as an absolute maniac. And frankly, he probably was. And that's probably what helped him. So by container word, the word business, a lot of people don't really understand that 90% of businesses, Mark, do not have any employees at all. 90%. Now, I'm rounding, but it's close. Meaning that the business consists of the owner only.
Yep.
And they put it together to be able to have a legal entity by which to service their customer. That's really it. Now, for example, me, I do have employees in my business, but I also have another 7 businesses that I have for various reasons. They don't have employees. So the word business itself is not a key to anything. It's a legal construct. It's a container word. So that's why over the, since 99, I've continuously kind of redefined. When I say to people, I help business owners, what I discovered is a lot of, some people call them solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, a solo person that's in business.
Sure.
They get attracted to me and they think, well, Bill, you can really help me out. The truth is, and I'm going to give you these three foundational things in the future. And the answer is, no, I can't. I can't help anybody that has a business, 90% of them do, without any employees. And so we're going to talk about, if you're listening and you've got a business or thinking about a business, we're going to give you the three things you've got to do and do well in order for somebody to hand you money in return for your business.
Okay. So that leads us right into what we are going to talk about. And those are a couple of keys that people need to take away from this if they want to be successful, probably not just in anything, right? But especially in business. So let's start with a couple of topics and some keys that we can talk about for our audience here.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about three. So the first one is, and to some extent, another container word. So first thing we're talking about is business owner. What is it? And are they different? And what do you need to be? What kind of a business owner? And second, we're going to talk about business, if you will, from a management standpoint. How do you need to operate your business? And is there are different ways to do it? And if there are, which is the right one to make your business attractive to a buyer? And then third, we're going to talk about the whole notion of employees and then different levels of a group of employees and what kind of a team of employees you need. So those are the three topics.
Okay, really. Good. Let's launch right in.
Business and team. Sure. So the first one, owner-operator. So what do I mean when I say owner operator? So certainly a solopreneur, if you think about a solopreneur, the way she runs her business is by, at best, a bicycle is her vehicle. So it's just her, and she's got her high heels, and she can get nicer ones and better looking ones, and she can upgrade her suit and so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, she's still a solopreneur. All by herself, doing fantastic, perhaps. No one is going to buy her business. Why? Because it's her. They might want to hire her, but they're not going to buy the business because if they do, she'd go away and there'd be nothing there.
I see. So we're looking to try to make a business a bit scalable so that you can step out of that role, get some financial freedom, and still have something to sell. Is that right?
Yes. And absolutely, Mark. Because I used to be a solopreneur and I was a seven-figure solopreneur. That's rarefied air in itself. But I was able to make enough money that I could create wealth, from my business indirectly, but I invested in real estate and things like that. So what we need to do optimally is to convert yourself from owner-operator, and there's some iterations of that, and I'll circle back, into what I call an owner investor. Mm-hmm. Now, back to Mr. Elon Musk. Today, he is clearly an owner investor because he had the mental bandwidth, to be able to jump into this acquisition of Twitter. Why? Because he's an investor now. He's moved from being the guy that had to figure out the payment system way back at PayPal into the guy that can figure out how to reinvent a multi-billion dollar company like Twitter. Now, he'll either will or won't be successful. Time will tell. But he is clearly an owner investor. As a result, he's able to play around with different companies. If you want to sell your business, you need to be able to talk to the potential buyer and say, I'm not essential. I'm just a guy that owns this business and it runs on its own. To the extent that you can be not essential, you're sellable. If you are required in your business, that's the end of the game.
Listeners and viewers, the key is to make yourself expendable so that you can sell your business. You know, Bill, it's funny. When I talk to people about business, one of the things that I learned is that, well, two concepts. One is that people should not be working in their business. They should be working on their business, right? If they're working in their business, that means they're actively engaged in it. Number two is most people think the path to success is entrepreneurship, being that solopreneur. But here's what happens. They're a really great chef and they say, you know what? I can do this. I don't need to be working for the man. I'm going to go start my own restaurant. And now what happens? They're still a great chef, but now they have to be a great chef and a great business owner to succeed. So they end up working twice as hard, making roughly the same amount of money or less. And now they're just miserable, right? So they have to learn to do what you do. And that's to get them to scale to that next level, go through the phase of entrepreneurship, like you and I both did as individual solopreneurs, but move it to a level where you're scalable. Am I correct in summarizing something? Hey, it's Mark Yeagy, and I want to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for about 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. We have courses that teach you how to do this for yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part is that it takes just 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA account from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. Now, I'm not telling you this to brag, only so that you can do it too. If you want to get involved in this program, just click on the link below for the Cash Flow Machine, and you can start right away. Go through the phase of entrepreneurship like you and I both did as individual solopreneurs, but move it to a level where you're scalable. Am I correct in summarizing something?
Well,
like that?
Yeah. No, we're not saying that you have to do that.
Right.
What we're saying is if your objective is to convert your business into a pot of gold, then you must make this transition.
Got it.
Now, on the other hand, you can have very fine income and great, a life by being a solopreneur or what I call solopreneur with staff, which might be somebody that might have an employee or two or a virtual employee or two. That's perfectly fine. Okay. But a lot of times what happens, it gets even worse, like the back to your chef example, is if they've actually hired people and they got these people around them and then they insist on then meddling with everybody's affairs.
That's right.
And I even today, when I'm doing something with my wife, and she'll say, "Well, let me do that because I'm not going fast enough, or I didn't use the right knife, or whatever." As soon as she makes that move, I just bring my hands back, and that's a natural reaction. So if you're too involved in your business, your employees will naturally drop what they're doing and let you do it.
Yeah.
Why bother with employees at that point?
That's true. All right. So some really great value for our audience, everybody. And Bill's going to summarize a few things and maybe tell us a story when we come back from thanking our sponsor, which is me, by the way.
No, but, no.
All right. All right. So you got a little quick story about somebody that did this?
Oh, maybe. Okay. Yeah. So that's a beautiful story. Okay. So,
all right. So
in fact, I told this story yesterday to a client of mine who's finally getting to the point where she wants to become totally dispensable.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So her name's Natalie. So she called and said, "Bill, I'm ready. I'm finally ready." I said, "Okay." She said, "What I'm going to do is I'm going to, elevate Gina to position of president, and I'm going to move into CEO." I said, "Nana, you got to be kidding me." She says, what do you think? And I says, that's just another title of to the potential buyer that says you're really important. You're the chief executive officer, for goodness sake. Make yourself like the chief cook or bottle washer or something like that." So literally what I said to her, I say, "Natalie, look, make yourself a consultant to the company. Just make yourself a consultant, give yourself a contract, And the contract lasts for a year after the business is sold, and make Gina the CEO. Mechanically, you'll still be involved. I know you'll be involved. Gina needs your help. But the outside person coming in, you'd say, hey, welcome to the company. Here's Gina. She's the CEO. Well, what do you do? Well, I'm a consultant, and I'm here at as long as Gina wants to keep me around. And that is a great illustration. Now, I've had that exact thing happen over and over and over again.
And what does that do? What actually happens there? Are there numbers that we can put behind that?
Well, for example, how about going from a business that wasn't saleable at all and 1 year later selling it for one times revenue, which is $25 million.
See, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, because it isn't like you can get a little bit more, a little bit less. It's like a door, literally. Your business is either saleable at a premium or it's not.
Yep.
And so it's almost binary. Now there's different, levels and so forth and so on, but as a practical matter, it's literally binary. It's almost yes or no. It's right. Like a switch.
Wow.
So let's move on to concept number two. Now, I don't have a statistic. This is just my observation, but I'd say the vast, meaning probably over 85% of companies, operate opportunistically, meaning that their business is organized in a manner that if a new opportunity materializes, think of a construction company, an opportunity to build a new project would come up. They'll get what's called a request for proposal. That's an opportunity. They mobilize, they bid on it, and they get the job or not. That's an opportunity that comes up. Same side on the problem. If a problem shows up, this, oh, gee, a problem just showed up, and now we're going to deal with this problem. The pandemic-caused economic crises is an example of a problem that showed up. So most companies operate that way. It's kind of what I call the whack-a-mole system.
Yep.
Something pops up, you deal with it. Pops up, you deal with it.
So and often.
You look like a frantic, crazy person. And if I go into a company, Mark, and I see this sort of helter-skelter activity, I know that's the environment they're in. On the other hand, if I walk into the company and I see somebody over in a corner rubbing their chin thinking,
yep.
I go, okay, this company is dialed in. So the goal that you need to get to is you need to have your company operating it through a system, a method of management. Now, I'm not talking about a system of producing the product or a system of marketing or a system of advertising or a system of human resources. It's a system of management, a system that involves developing strategy and putting together a game plan,
sure,
and having everybody committing to making commitments to each other on an ongoing basis and holding each other accountable. That is a system of management. Now, I created one back in the mid-90s. You mentioned it earlier, Mark, called the Business Mastery System. Mm-hmm. And it's a system of management which operates top to bottom. By top to bottom, I mean at the executive level down to the front line, like the superintendent and her team of three, to any sized company, to any a company with a portfolio of a company. It's a system of management. Nobody will buy your business if they see that you're only opportunistically oriented, because they'll say, well, what's going to happen after I buy it? Well, we always said things show up. I mean, business sort of comes word of mouth and we have business. Well, that's not going to be something interesting to a buyer.
So important is to have a system. We tell people that all the time in the stock market.
So you always like case studies. So let me tell you a case study about that. So what basically I had this construction company, they're doing about 10 million. The funny thing was they were doing about 10 million for 8 years in a row. So that was their size. So when they even introduced themselves, they introduced themselves as a $10 million construction company.
Okay.
And you wonder, why were they that size? Well, they're a $10 million construction company. So what I got them to realize is that they're just opportunistic. In other words, they're in this geography and certain work shows up and they bid on the work, and if they've got the capability to do it, then they would do it. If they didn't, they'd have to pass on the job. By capability, I mean the people, the equipment, and the money to do something. It's called being resource constrained. Well, I convinced that company, $10 million business, to go into being an asset-based company or a resource-based company. In their particular case, they happen to have a skill which was, if you will, high level welding, because they were involved in natural gas pipelines. You got to weld these pipelines. You don't want them to leak. So
that skill then
was what I said to them. You've got to then basically market that skill over and over and forget about geography. Forget about 10 million bucks. Okay. So they do that. They invite a bunch of vendors and customers and clients, and they have this, they envision a party, not a party. An event where people came and they give a couple speeches and so on and so on. Any event, the next month, they won a $40 million contract.
Holy moly.
For 8 years, they were a $10 million company doing several dozen jobs a year to doing $40 million in one job in 1 year. Anyway, they went on to sell their business for $250 million.
Wow. Wow.
So that's from worthless, basically, to $250 million.
So did they call themselves a $250 million company after that?
Pardon me?
Did they call themselves a $250 million
company? No, they didn't. And they're still kicking around, and
good.
They've been sold. And now they're probably up in the multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons behind that, but the primary thing was systematizing their business, being strategically oriented, not opportunistic.
Yep.
Now, look, Mark, you know me. You know that I've got a handful of private clients. None of my clients had anything remotely close to a downturn during the pandemic. All of them had record years. They all had record profits. They're still having record years and record profits. It's all now. Did I know there was going to be this pandemic and the economic mess created by it? No, I had no idea. I just knew that you had to effectively have fire drills. You had to know that something's going to go wrong. Who knows what's going to cause something going wrong? But practice what if? That's being systematized. And so they all did. And so when the pandemic came along, they were able to take it in stride, if you will. So that's number two.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So let's summarize real quick, because what I'm hearing is that you've got to be able to go from being a solopreneur to being scalable if you want to sell. Now, if you want to just run your business, Correct. You can run your business. And that means you have to have systems and processes. Am I right?
Correct.
And in order to do that, you can't be resource constrained and you can't be opportunistic. You've got to be strategic. How's that so far?
Perfect. Yeah, on this resource constrained part, the best way to think about that is to decide what to do and then get the resources.
Got it.
Not decide what to do based on the resources you have.
Uh-huh.
And what people don't seem to understand is that resources are extremely readily available.
That's true.
Somebody has what you want, and they'll be willing to barter with you, trade with you, rent to you, loan to you, do it for you for a fee, all kinds of stuff. But people don't think that way unless they get their strategy and their planning first.
Yep.
So number three.
Yeah.
Number three is leveraging high performance teams. Now, we've gone beyond solopreneur. We've got employees and so forth and so on. Now, a lot of people think If you just hire the best and let them do what they think is right, everything will be so beautiful. Just hire the best people, let them do what they want. And let me give you an example. Now, I realize you've got a lot of listeners that don't understand football.
I was just thinking about a football analogy. This is great.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I look on businesses being like football for a reason we'll come back to, but what I'm going to talk about all these people. So we we've got beautiful illustrations of, if you will, Olympic teams being assembled with all these superstars. True. Just look stupid and fail completely because they're actually playing against the team. Yep. As opposed to a collection of stars. So if you've got people that you've recruited and you've asked them to do their best, and for example, in football, you have people called guards and tackles. That's a position in football. It's in the line. So one of the things those people do from time to time is they'll pull, and they'll go out and they'll block an outside linebacker, for example, which is fine. However, you don't want that person deciding when to do that, because
that's right.
The play may not involve that, but in a business, it's unbelievable that people allow their employees, their managers, to decide whether or not to pull and go block somebody.
So they can be the best guard in the world.
You can be the
Pro Bowl guard, the highest draft pick. You just still don't want them making that decision to go pull.
No, you don't want them making that decision. Same with, now we look at a wide receiver. That's somebody that runs down the field and catches the ball when the quarterback gets it to them. So down the field they go. They run their route. It's all perfect. They come back and they say, "What the hell happened? I was wide open. I did a beautiful route." And you say, "Hey, George, the quarterback just got sacked. We're back 12 yards." So the thing about business and football that's in common is that everybody on every play returns to the line of scrimmage. It does. The people that made the mistakes go to the line of scrimmage. The people that ran the beautiful route and did their somersault thing and came back, everybody's back at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
So what you want to do is get your business operating as a high performance team. So people need to understand the roles of everybody else on the team. Mm-hmm. And hold each other accountable for commitments. For example, we want the guard to commit, if you will, "I will not go pull out and go block the linebacker if we've got a passing play going on. I'm committed to do my job," if you will. So a high performance team is a group of individuals, and frankly, the more talented, the better, as long as they have an accountability culture. So number three is convert a group of employees, or particularly a group of managers, from high-performance individuals into a cohesive, highly accountable team. That's number three. You get all those three dialed in, and you've got a super marketable company.
And in order to do that, and even the first two, don't you have to have good leadership skills?
Interesting point. A lot of people, Mark, think that leadership skills and management skills are similar. They're not.
That's right. They're not.
So leadership is an essential management skill. So if you're going to be in a position of management, or owning a company, managing it, or the sales manager or the production manager, you need leadership skills as well. But also in your company, you need individuals with leadership skills.
That's right.
By that I mean somebody at the front line. So you need somebody, for example, if you're in construction, you need one of your laborers to understand an unsafe situation and deal with it, not to say, "Well, I wonder where the boss is. And we have this ladder sitting here that shouldn't be there." So leadership is vital, but you need a lot of leadership in a company.
Yeah, you definitely do. It goes back to that football team. Imagine having a Pro Bowl football team, but not having anybody to lead it, right? You just, "Hey, everybody, let's all go out for a pass," right? It doesn't really work. So you have to have the right leadership in place, knowing their role as well. So really great. So leverage high performance teams, and part of that is accountability. So Bill, you've broken it down into three key areas, and I know you have a few more that you can cover, but it's probably beyond the scope of the podcast here, but where can people go to find out a bit more about you and what you can offer maybe?
So my website is with all sorts of resources on it. It's Scaleology.guru, G-U-R-U, Scaleology.guru, all kinds of resources there. But probably the fastest way to get to the front of the line is just go to getbillsgift.com, and then you'll be given a free membership to one of my communities, which is called CEO Alliance. And so all the same resources are there. Many of them are free. And there's a couple of paid levels too, but they're perfectly and totally optional.
Great. Well, getbillsgift.com. I'll have that in the show notes as well, Bill. And I'm going to ask you a couple more questions.
Yes, sir.
And then we'll have a little bit of fun with it. So take a deep breath. These are easy questions. If you could have coffee or tea with any human, past or present, who would you choose and what would you ask them?
So any human being, past or present, I would definitely love to have a conversation with Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
Wow, good one. Nice.
Yeah, so Benjamin Franklin. And what I would ask is, how did you seem to pack so much into such a short life?
Yeah. He had a pretty long life for the time he lived, right?
Well, he had a long life.
He did an amazing amount of things.
He did an amazing amount of things.
Statesman, foreign traveler, inventor, philosopher. He was really kind of a
and actually guy. Thomas Jefferson also was somebody that people didn't realize but in addition to being an architect, he had a whole bunch of other capabilities at a very high level.
Yes, he did.
Being an historian, etc.
Yeah.
But Benjamin Franklin is who I'd go see.
Good one. And let's see, if you could leave the world with one piece of advice for people to improve their life, what would that be?
So this piece of advice is something that I do literally every single day. And in summary, I'll call it focus on the vital few and ignore the trivial many. And everything that you do is equally important. And so every day, what I do, Mark, is I decide what the most vital single thing I can do that day to move, if you will, myself closer to my long-term vision. What's the single most important thing? No, I'll do more things than one, but that's my most important. And the way I go through this drill is once a day, I review the previous day and say to myself, as a result of everything I did today, am I closer to or further from my long-term vision? The answer is one or the other, yes or no. Regardless, I don't dwell on that. That just sets me up for my next question, which is, what's the most vital thing I can do this next upcoming day that will move me the longest distance or the farthest towards my long-term vision?
That's focus it. On the vital few, everyone. That's advice from Bill Prater. Bill, it's such a pleasure to see you, have you as a guest on our podcast, drop these value nuggets for everybody. So I want to thank you, and I want to leave everybody with this final thought, and that is never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Thanks for being on the Wealth Architect Podcast, Bill, and thanks for listening and watching, Wealth Architect Podcast listeners and watchers. Have a great day. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.